Morning. Please be seated. 2 weeks ago today, a group of 10 youth and adults from All Souls headed to New York with 4 other parishes from this diocese. We went on a service trip, and we stayed in a church in Brooklyn. And our intention was to do Superstorm Sandy relief work. And you'll be hearing momentarily from 4 youth who were on the trip, and I don't want to take any of their stories away, but it was a frustrating trip. It was not what we expected or planned on. We did some good work, more and less related to Sandy than we had anticipated. We sometimes had showers, and sometimes we didn't. And at the end of our trip, we spent a couple days touring New York, which was grand. We did not go on a tourist trip, but we did get to see the Met and Central Park and Ground Zero and the top of Rockefeller Center, and we walked the High Line Park. We went to St. John the Divine. We did a lot of really great stuff. But it was a frustrating trip. And we went to work with Occupy Sandy and with some gentlemen who started Occupy, or were at least a part of the starting of the Occupy Wall Street movement, which is notoriously disorganized. And we experienced that on this trip. The lack of structure, the lack of authority was made apparent, the struggles and the difficulties with that. And they'll tell you some about the work that we did and what was good and what was not so great about it. Our theme was Micah 6:8, what is good? To do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with the Lord your God. And so in large and small groups, we talked about what that means, what that looks like, what are the challenges about that? How do we do that in our everyday lives? How are we affected by injustice on large scales? How do we bring justice to smaller scales? I think our conversations were really fruitful. Our time together was really fruitful. So I just want to share 2 experiences that struck me, or 1 real experience, and just in general, I suppose, experiences that struck me most particularly, and then Julia, Margaret, Riley, and Jillian will tell you their stories. Like I said, we didn't always have showers, and we got there expecting to have showers arranged, and they weren't. So after our first very sweaty, long, hard, hot day of work, we were told that we could shower at the public pools, and that the public pools had individual showers. So we walked to a public pool in our neighborhood. All the public pools in New York are free. We don't need to have a membership. We didn't have to pay anything. We need to have locks, which we did not know. We also had to have swimwear, which we did not know. Some of us, myself included, did not bring a swimsuit. I do not like to swim with youth, so I just didn't bring it. And I didn't think that I would need it to shower. So we get in line, and we were in a neighborhood in Brooklyn called Bedford-Stuyvesant. It's a very poor neighborhood, predominantly African-American, very much struck by the economic hardships of the last several years. So we get in line, and they refused us. They said we didn't have locks, we didn't have swimsuits, we didn't have membership, we couldn't swim. And so we walked away dejected and tried to decide whether we could go in our small groups, and would they know it was the same group, and would they recognize us, and on and on. So one woman, the nicer of the 2 women, said if we came in our smaller groups, she would let us. So my small group went first. And I didn't have a swimsuit, and we didn't have locks, and we were wearing street shoes, and on and on. And so they said, no, we just can't take you. You need to have locks. This isn't safe. We're not responsible for your goods. Sorry. And I said, well, what if I don't take a shower and watch their stuff? Can they go in without locks? And they said, well, no, blah, blah. As we started to leave, the security guard, a Brooklyn police officer, she ran after me and said, hold on. Let me see if I can work something out with them. I'll even stay late after the pool closes so that you guys can shower. And so we went and we talked about it. She said, I don't know if I can guarantee anything. I'll talk to them. I'm stepping out on a limb. This isn't my turf. This is not my job. But you guys are here doing good work, and I want to see if I can get you showers. And through much back and forth, we finally were able to get into the pool. The kids swam. They tried to shower. They were not personal individual showers. There was no hot water. And they were rushed out. The girls, at least, were rushed out. The guys, the four of them that decided to swim and whatnot, did get to shower and use shampoo and soap. The girls, we got to swim. They got to swim. So it was better than nothing. But it was a striking experience to be the privileged and the stranger, and for this woman to step out on a limb and offer herself and her time so that we could shower. We cut a picture with her, and I intended to go back, but since I never even got to go into the building, I ended up not going back, and I wanted to get her name. I don't know her name. I wish that I did. I would love to send her a thank you card. But she was, I think, for me, my first glimmer of kindness on our trip and generosity. And I will forever remember her and hopefully can zoom in on the picture and get her badge number or something. We'll see. But also, I was so struck and humbled by our youth and their patience and their flexibility as we struggled to find work, as we struggled to find showers, as we dealt with, they were rock stars. And they worked with us every step of the way and were so gracious even when we were as adults at our wits' end. And we were hot and tired and frustrated, and they were willing to do whatever was available and with good spirits. And we lived well into Micah and also into Isaiah when we removed the evil of our doings from before God's eyes. We ceased to do evil. We learned to do good. We sought justice. We tried to rescue the oppressed and defend the orphan and plead for the widow. And it didn't work out the way we expected. But I think we were shaped by it, and that is a lot of what these trips are about. So I'm going to stop, and I'm going to invite Julia up to start, and then we will hear from the rest.
When I found out last winter from Sarah that New York was one of the immersion trip options this year and that we would do Hurricane Sandy relief there, I was so excited to go. I love going to New York. It is an exciting place full of people, full of history, and full of life. I especially liked the thought of doing work that really applied to a current problem. Sandy was a recent event, and it seemed right to do work that supported issues that were at large in society. However, when we got to New York, our God Squad was faced with unprecedented disorganization with the Occupy Sandy group with whom we were working. For the entire work section of the trip, we never had a complete understanding of where we were going to work, who we would meet, and even when, where, or if we would have showers. The first few days, we ended up meandering around public swimming pools and getting kicked out of them in order to find a place to wash off. Some of the first work days ended up feeling a waste of time, particularly the day that we went to an abandoned church to pull weeds. It was a huge frustration for both the youth and the adults on the trip. In retrospect, however, this trip gave me the opportunity to practice patience, flexibility, and faith that everything will work out. This applies to the second lesson today from Hebrews. It talks about how with faith Abraham journeyed to find the promised land for his descendants, even though he did not know where he was going in this very foreign land. This immersion trip, our group had to use perseverance and faith that we would be able to make our work count, even when we did not know where we were going or what we were doing. The reading also says that Abraham's descendants sought a better land than the homeland they were promised. They searched for a heavenly place. One of the best parts of our trip was working with a group of people who live in a poor neighborhood in Brooklyn. The neighborhood suffered less from the physical damage of Hurricane Sandy than from the economic impact it created, which added on to the stress of the economic recession in the last 5 years. We worked on a house that was to be turned into an educational center for children in the neighborhood so that they could have a better chance at making a stronger future for themselves and their communities. It belongs to a man named Radio, who himself was enduring the early stages of foreclosure. The worksite had several rooms we had to clear out that were filled with molded junk. When we finished our work, Radio and the rest of his team, Justin, Bobo, DJ, Jelani, and Jordan, were so thankful that they invited us to have a barbecue together that evening. The next night, they came over to the church we were staying at and had dinner with us. Following the meal, Radio, Bobo, Justin, and Jelani all got up to give us an empowering speech about how the young people in this world are the future and that we have to take action to make the world a better place. It is clear that despite the difficult situation that they live in, the group all saw a vision of the future in our community of youth, a vision of the heavenly place they are working for where there is kindness and justice for everyone. Our group theme on the trip was a passage from Micah, which offers a statement that what is good is to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with our God. Our group discussed these three things throughout the week and grew closer together as a community through the sharing of stories and insights upon this passage. Additionally, despite the difficult logistics of this immersion trip, I think it was clear to the people that we served that we were working hard for a future that aimed for a just, kind, and humble community of people, even far away in foreign places.
In today's gospel, Jesus tells us, among other things, to be followers of God's teachings, even when it seems like he's not watching. He tells us to always serve others because we never know when we will encounter him. On our mission trip, we as a group focused on a passage from Micah, which tells us also to serve people. We are told in Micah 6:8 to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly. In one of our many discussions about the three aspects of this passage, we talked about kindness. We as a group came to the conclusion that sometimes the best kindnesses come from people when you are least expecting it, and when they have no obligation to do anything at all. The people doing these so-called random acts of kindness are precisely following what the gospel has called them to do today. They are serving others without being asked. During our trip, we were welcomed by many kind-hearted people, but one in particular stuck out to me. There was this man who worked at the church that we were staying in named Muhammad. During my time there, I never had a full conversation with this man, but he made strong impressions on and built relationships with others during our stay, and I was definitely aware of who he was. On the day that we gathered outside of the church on the last day, Muhammad said goodbye to all of us, which at the time seemed insignificant and routine, and so we left and continued on to St. John the Divine, which was the last place we were going to visit before we left. Before entering this enormous, beautiful Gothic cathedral, we were stopped by Father Phil, who informed us that Muhammad had given each of us youth $10 to spend however we wanted before he had said goodbye that morning. Now, $10 doesn't seem like a lot of money, but when multiplied by the 26 youth that were there, it had cost him a significant amount. This man, who probably doesn't make that much money to begin with, gave $260 to a group of people that he barely knew. This kindness came as a total surprise because none of us were expecting to get anything from anyone, especially a man that many of us barely knew. Even so, it made me feel appreciative and very, very grateful. He was so generous to us without any sort of prompt. He just willingly gave not only his money, but his time in cleaning up the church. Muhammad is a living example of kindness for Micah and of the gospel today, because even when he wasn't called upon by God or his neighbors, he still put forth something that he could give.
I think the greatest thing I took away from this experience was the importance of hope and confidence in the future. Residents of the Bedford-Stuyvesant neighborhood of Brooklyn showed me that during our work there. We met and worked with some community leaders such as Rodney, also known as Radio, Bobo, and Justin, to name a few, all connected with the Occupy Sandy and Occupy Wall Street movements. Our goal was to take the bottom floor of Radio's house and begin improving it into a youth education center for the community, a project clearly invested in the strength of the society's future. Radio, in particular, had been experiencing some of the negative aspects of gentrification and was in the early stages of foreclosure, going through some tough times. But just seeing the 26 of us sitting on his porch, ready to do the work, ready to help, brought him to the verge of tears. We were there to join him in this project that would hopefully create a positive impact on the future. He was so moved by both our mere presence and willingness to make this thing happen. After 2 days of work there on Pulaski Street, we held a community dinner in the basement of the Church of St. Luke and St. Matthew, which is where we slept each night. After we finished eating, Radio Justin, a priest named Michael, and Jelani, a man running for local office, each said some words for us, assuring us that we were doing meaningful things there, empowering us to make change, and telling us that we, youth, are the hope of the future. It seemed like Justin and Jelani in particular were even competing with each other in their speeches, each of them trying to inspire us more than the other had. This theme of confidence and hope and passionate strive for positive change, mainly through the lens of restorative justice, kept recurring throughout our 10 days. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. While I'm not really sure what that even means, I think this is where the treasure of these people lies, in the hope, in their hope and vision for the future. It's a risky place to put your treasure, but I think after going on this trip, it is truly altruistic and one of the nobler and better places to put it. You may never see the actual results, and many obstacles will go up against you in your quest. Disorganization and an occasional lack of showers were a few that came up for us during our trip. But remember, Abraham and Moses and others never actually got what they were looking for, but from a distance they saw and greeted them. Those who search and work for a better future may never actually get it, but their efforts do serve a real purpose and actually do take steps to gain that ultimate vision.
Good morning. All right, so this past trip has been particularly bittersweet for me because since I have graduated this year, this was and will be my last mission trip as a youth. And until I can be old enough to go as a chaperone, of course. But as always, like all the other trips I've been on, it was a remarkable experience. And throughout the 10 days, as many of us have already mentioned, we have a central theme of doing justice, love kindness, and to walk humbly. We have it on our shirts. It is the official theme. And in the evenings, we would, after all the work and after we were mostly clean, we would discuss one of the themes over the several days, and many of those times would call us to be vulnerable in our smaller groups that were mostly chosen at random with people that we had most likely never met before. And throughout the trip, we certainly saw our fair share of injustice all around us, especially in the neighborhoods. But we also saw many acts of justice, unexpected and expected. And when we spoke about kindness, that was when the most vulnerable chance to share stories became obvious, because everyone would share stories about times they had been kind to others and then times that others had been kind to them, ranging from a friend picking you up on the side of the road when your car is broken down to a mentor in life-changing situations. But of all the themes, the humility stuck to me the most, because when I thought of being humble and humility, I always thought it was just do not be prideful, do not be full of yourself. But the definition we went by was that people realizing that they have their own faults and that others can fill in those holes, and also that we ourselves have talents to bring and to help others who are not so talented in those areas. And this was very obvious in all of the work that we did, because not everyone was as great as bringing down walls as other people. And some of us are the best trash picker-uppers ever. So, and even before we got our lesson on humility and letting others take over jobs that we cannot do, it was already clear in the group chemistry that we already knew that lesson, that we allowed others to take over when we could not do things. And one girl in particular could break down a wall with a small hammer faster than any of those large teenage boys could with a giant sledgehammer. And she was awesome at that. And also, on a more serious note about this topic, is while towards the end of the week, When we got to the more organized groups, mostly associated with the Red Cross, one of the workers there told us the stories about the workers telling us that, yes, pulling weeds is important. And most people get overwhelmed by them because when the storm comes in and the weeds are literally taking over your house, you don't know where to begin. When we got to the sites, we didn't know where to begin. And it wasn't even our homes. But she also said that many people in that area had immigrated from more difficult situations, more harsh countries, and they had moved here to feel safe. But when the storm came, they no longer felt safe in their own homes, in their neighborhoods, and it just rocked their foundations. And in addition to that, all these strangers would come up saying, "We want to help," but they were putting their faith in complete strangers to fix their homes. And these are volunteers. They don't know how experienced, qualifications, or any of that. And especially since I was 18, and only one other youth was 18, we were on the mold remediation, which was really gross. And we went to this house, and we had our masks on, we had the gloves, big rubber kitchen gloves, and we went and we scrubbed her stairs for 45 minutes to an hour. And she was very reluctant to let us in her house. She did not speak English very well. She was very concerned about what we were doing there. And once we finally got down to the basement and did the work, she felt more comfortable. She thanked us at the end, and it was fine. But in regards to the humility part, it was less about pride and more about fear, about what that would entail to have just a bunch of people come into your home that you want to feel safe in. And, well, altogether, everyone brought something different home from the trip, and either from our theme or from the readings, and also from the gospel and just events that happened. And then one that I really took from the dinner, while they're battling to see who could inspire us the most, he said that we are not inheriting this world from our parents. We are borrowing it from our children. And I think that's a great message to take away.